Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Lawmakers will convene the 2019 state legislative session next Tuesday, and there's a lot at stake for New Mexicans. We've got a new Democratic governor, Michelle Lujan Grisham. Leaders of the state House and the state Senate are Democrats, and they've all said that education is their number one priority this year. With one party controlling government, there's the potential for a lot of action during the session. Criminal justice reform, taxes, increasing the minimum wage, legalizing recreational cannabis. These are just some of the things that lawmakers will be considering this year. And of course, the state budget. What would you like to see lawmakers achieve in this session? What issues are most important to you? What would you be really upset to see lawmakers fail to do? And what would you like us to cover during the session? You can call us now, 277-5866. That's in the 505 area code. It's 277-5866, or you can email letstalk@kunm.org. We've got KUNM's reporters here in the studio today, reporter Marisa DeMarco, May Ortega, and Hannah Colton, who are both with the Public Health Project here at KUNM. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello. We've also got Andy Lyman. He's a reporter with nmpoliticalreport.com, and Tripp Jennings, executive director of New Mexico in Depth. Good morning.
Good morning.
So we've got this new Democratic governor, Michelle Lujan Grisham. The state House and the state Senate are both under the control of Democrats. Does this just mean that it's like smooth sailing for everything that Democrats wanted but couldn't do for the last 8 years under a Republican governor? Or is that partisan analysis maybe too simplistic, Tripp?
It's too simplistic. I mean, part of it is, there's a new governor. Democrats picked up 8 new seats in the House in 2018. It's a more progressive Democratic caucus. The Senate wasn't elected, so you've got the same kind of numbers and whatnot. But remember, geographical diversity. Some Democrats who are from down south are not necessarily the Democrats in Santa Fe or Albuquerque. But there is going to be a honeymoon period. There is. There always is. Remember Martinez, the first 2 years, there was some honeymoon. There was definitely that during Richardson. Richardson got a lot. You speak to former lawmakers and they say first 2 years is when you really want to do everything because you've got all this kind of goodwill and stuff like this. And that's what you're going to look for. If you remember Richardson, he had a democratically controlled legislature. Second term broke down.
So even though there were Democrats.
Yeah, totally. Exactly.
Andy, what does this mean for Republican lawmakers who maybe felt like they had to answer to a Republican in the governor's mansion? Will there be more room for them to work across the aisle with their Democratic colleagues?
I think so. I think there's a sort of a different class of Republicans coming into this. There was sort of a different alliance with Martinez and her cabinet. Her office. I think we'll see a lot of crossing the aisles. I think sort of to go off of what Tripp was just saying too is the sheer numbers of Democrats. It gives them some leeway to sort of go against their party sometimes and maybe vote with their constituency or their conscience a little bit and maybe align with Republicans and vice versa.
Meaning that there's maybe less about party and more about policy on both sides of the aisle?
Well, we can always hope, right? I mean that's the hope of every reporter and a lot of citizens, which is, we know the partisan stuff isn't going to happen, but let's like think about the state and how we move it forward and stuff like this. So I'm kind of facetious, but yes, hopefully.
So education, number one priority for both Democratic leaders in the House and the Senate and for Governor Lujan Grisham. Hannah, you've been reporting on education for KUNM, and there's this ruling in this huge lawsuit that came down last year that's going to have a big impact on what happens in the roundhouse this year. Can you recap what the Yazzie Martinez lawsuit was and Judge Singleton's ruling?
Sure, right. So this was two consolidated lawsuits that had come from plaintiffs all over the state, mostly in low-income communities, Native American communities, other communities that have a lot of at-risk students. And it had been years of these plaintiffs saying, hey, we're not getting adequate education. And this past July, a judge found that New Mexico's public education system has been violating the state constitution by not adequately educating those students, and specifically those students were English language learners, students who were low income, Native American students, and those with disabilities.
So you covered some interim legislative committee work. This is part of an initiative in the KUNM newsroom with our partner New Mexico PBS and inpolitics.net with Heath Houseman. Went to some of the interim committee meetings, specifically one of the legislative education study committee meetings. And of course, this is where legislators are meeting not during the session, but during the rest of the year. They're gathering information, they're debating policy,
right,
determining their priorities
from a lot of community
organizations.
Yeah.
So, and sometimes even start drafting bills, right? So what did you learn at this LESC meeting about what we might see during the session with respect to the kinds of remedies for the lack of constitution or the violation of the constitutional rights of so many students in New Mexico?
Right. So the legislature sort of has this mandate, right? And not just the legislature. It's like the governor and PED can unilaterally make a lot of changes to the education system. But the legislature is also feeling a lot of this pressure, especially when it comes to appropriations. So at the LESC meetings, there was one in particular that was held at one of these high poverty schools in Albuquerque, actually. And so there were all of these students that came to me. It did feel like a chance for the community to come and say, and at least witness, you know, the remedies being discussed. And, you know, nothing definitive. I think at that meeting, it was MALDEF, the attorneys for the plaintiffs, and the New Mexico Center for Law and Poverty presenting their sort of platform of remedies, which is not necessarily the same as the remedies proposed by the Latino Education Task Force, who also represents the plaintiffs in another way. And I think the takeaway is there's just a lot of stakeholders, and it's not totally clear how those stakeholders' desires and wishes for the education system are going to be translated into legislation.
Sure. So some of the reporting that you've done for us has involved Chicano and Latino ethnic studies, Native American ethnic studies, and efforts to address inequities for those populations. What kinds of things have you heard from advocates for those populations about how New Mexico's education system can be changed in order to relieve those inequities and eliminate them?
Right. I think one of the sort of basic, like most fundamental asks, right, is just that students see themselves reflected in their curriculum and also in their teachers. And so wanting to really shift the education system from being Anglo and Eurocentric when it comes to especially history curriculum to shifting it to better reflect all the populations of the state. And so those are things that were supposed to have happened with the Hispanic Education Act and the Indian Education Act, and they've already been legislated. And one of the big points of this judge's ruling in this lawsuit was that those things have not actually been happening.
They're just not actually happening, even
right,
though they're legally prescribed.
Yeah. And even though you have all these community organizations who are offering things like curricula, right, who are offering their help to PED, that help hasn't been necessarily wanted or solicited in the last several years, I think.
So we're talking about the 2019 state legislative session right here on Let's Talk New Mexico, and we'd like to hear from you. What would you like to see lawmakers do to address inequity in education in New Mexico? The number to call is 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. We're in the 505 area code. You can also post a comment to our Facebook page. Just search for KUNM Radio. Andy, what have you found in your coverage of education for nmpoliticalreport.com? What are you hearing from lawmakers that you're talking to about how these kinds of issues are going to be addressed this year?
I think it's just kind of up in the air. There's a lot of questions there. Something interesting happened where our lieutenant governor is now the sort of de facto or interim head of PED. There seems to be a really calculated move to replace or to appoint the new person there.
Like it hasn't been done yet.
Mm-hmm. It's probably going to be the last appointment we see. I've heard some people say, well, we have to have somebody during the session, but we may not, because we actually have somebody sort of running the show and being ahead there. And I think they're, it's sort of a big up in the air question of what's going to happen next.
Well, and Governor Lujan Grisham has already used her executive powers. Talk about what she did with respect to the park testing system.
Right. So it's a standardized test, and I would be surprised if we walk away without another standardized test at some point. But yes, I read somewhere that New Jersey is the only other state that still uses this standardized test that we were using. And I think more importantly than just the test itself is this sort of transformation that we're probably going to see of the weight of teacher, you know, teachers' evaluations and tied to the testing and stuff like that. So,
well, this is the test system that the Martinez administration implemented, and students walked out of classrooms, teachers burned their teacher evaluations. I mean, there was a lot of resistance to the implementation of this system. And so here we have the new governor. One of the first things she's done is scrap that entirely, both for students, for assessing student performance, and using that information in assessing teacher performance as well, right?
And it starts to cause a problem with grading the schools too, because in sort of the more affluent neighborhoods or affluent schools, you've got parents saying, I'm not going to have my kid take that test. And so
right,
that actually affects,
well.
Right, it affects the school grade that way. So you've got these really, really great schools that have an F or a D grade. And then there's, of course, in our previous education plan or current education plan that will probably soon go away, there's sort of consequences to that, right? They can come in, and the state can come in and sort of revamp your school and take over and do things there.
So, Tripp, you've reported for New Mexico In Depth that the budget negotiation process this year is going to be a little bit different, because whatever lawmakers and the governor come up with, that when we're talking about funding for education, that is then going to be subject to review and approval by Judge Singleton, who is the one who came down with this ruling in the Yazzie Martinez lawsuit. What is that even going to look like? What are you hearing from lawmakers that you're talking to?
I think this is uncharted territory for some of them. I mean, they have models that they're looking at. You know, there was a lawsuit called Jackson lawsuit, which is about developmentally disabled, probably more than a decade ago. And then there was the Zuni lawsuit, which was about how education funding and what I think the models that some of these folks are looking at is, you know, they would like this to be one and done, but that's not going to happen. I mean, you know, when the ruling came down, we talked to people in Washington State, and they're dealing with this 10 years on. They're still working out this stuff. And I think some of the financial types are sitting here going, Zuni was a couple of decades ago, so it's like, you know, well, two decades later, are we going to be in the same room, and are they going to be the voice at the table helping us figure out the budget? And I think that's probably, they're all trying to figure this out, because it's not a coincidence that she put April as the time that she's going to rule. They're out in March 16th.
Judge Singleton said you guys have to figure it out by April.
Those of us who've been around and, you know, probably are sitting here kind of going, they're not going to get this right the first time, because the advocates are pushing for $1 billion. And that's just the.
Well, let's talk about $1 billion, right? The state has a $1 billion surplus in this current fiscal year, right? Mm-hmm. Because of the oil boom in southeastern New Mexico, predominantly, right?
Yes, and there are lawmakers and legislative staff who are like, you know, kind of behind the scenes going, that's not as much as we think it's going to be, because first off, we've got to think about New Mexico and how its economy works. This is one industry, and everybody's talking about the Delaware Basin, which is producing so much in the Permian. But a lot of these folks have been around, and they're like, we've been here before. Oh, this is going to like last us for 2 decades, and then the bottom crashes.
Well, and you've also reported that education spending hasn't actually returned to levels from before the Great Recession.
Inflation-adjusted dollars, yeah.
Of inflation-adjusted. Yeah. So there's this question of, will all those billion dollars be put towards education, or will they be split amongst all the different aspects of state government, and that's all?
Yes, I mean, there are state agencies that have a lot of vacancies. There are people who are having high turnover. That, you know, Patricia Lundstrom, who is the leader, the chairperson of the House Budget Committee, is like saying, roads, we gotta spend money on roads, because at the same time we have problems with the operational budget. There's a state transportation fund that's been just dying for the last 15 years, and so they haven't been able to spread money around roads, and that's an economic development tool. Film cap, that's another thing that they're going to talk about with Netflix in the state.
There's a cap on the amount of incentives that the state will provide to the film industry.
There are so many needs out there, mm-hmm. in addition to education.
Trip Jennings is executive director of New Mexico In Depth. Andy Lyman is a reporter with nmpoliticalreport.com. We've got Hannah Colton here from Public Health New Mexico. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. And we want to know from you this morning, do you feel out of the loop when it comes to our state legislature and the work that state lawmakers do? What do you wish that you understood better? Call us now and we'll see if we've got some answers for you. 277-5866. That's 277-5866. You can also tweet us using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. I'm Elaine Baumgartel and we're going to take a quick break.
UNM Health Children's Hospital cares for New Mexico's smallest and most vulnerable. Proud to bring health to children for over 50 years and proud to support KUNM Public Radio.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Representing Native American tribes, people facing criminal charges, civil rights plaintiffs, and victims of sexual abuse. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Conductor Francisco Nunez says mentors make all the difference.
Growing up, so many people were so generous. I don't know why. They wanted nothing in return. They only wanted me to succeed. And all I wanted to do is do the same thing.
Giving back with the Young People's Chorus of New York City on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. The New Mexico legislature convenes for a 60-day session next week. We're talking about a bunch of different things that lawmakers will be considering this year. You can call us now to weigh in on our conversation. What do you want to see lawmakers prioritize this year? 277-5866 is the number to call. You can also tweet us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. Let's go to the phones now and take a call from Mario. From Torreon. Good morning, Mario. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I guess my thing I'm very interested, I'm a liaison for the tri-chapter communities of Torreon, Ojo Encino, and Counselors, New Mexico, which feeds into Cuba Independent School Districts, which is a plaintiff in the Yazzie Martinez case. Our main concern is, I guess, we look through the Mexico Indian Education Act and what's already been legislated. Of course, we understand we don't want this just to become a money issue, saying where this all boils down to, well, how much is this more going to equal to our budget of school districts, saying that we want to see deep down intense qualitative change of educational assessments and outcomes, student success. Measured not just by, school grades, but with the deep qualitative analysis. And it mirrors what you said with the stuff. There's many people out here that the newly formed Institute for American Indian Education, which is seeking to help provide answers. And it's very heartening to hear that maybe this new legislation administration is open to such ideas, which all comes down to the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, Articles 13 and 14 within there. We really want the indigenous worldview, epistemological worldview, to be honored in a lot of this education. That's our main focus. That's the focus of our communities, because there's a certain treasure out there, which is New Mexico has whole societies, whole civilizations that think differently than Western civilization. And those things should be honored, and a lot of learning can go across both ways. And so that's really a lot of our positions out here, people that are on the ground.
Mario, let me ask you this. What would you like to see from lawmakers? How would you like to, how can they answer your call for this change in the state education system?
I would see some kind of directive or memorial, creating Indian Education Task Force, at least. I know those things can become benign over time, but to have people sit down and pick and choose certain school districts that are, like, mainly one, Cuba Independent Schools is now like 70% Navajo students, and figure out what exactly are, you know, how does the qualitative side affect the quantitative test score side and assessments, and build something, a test case scenario, mm-hmm. that actually honors Michigan Education Act, and involving all local leadership rather than the PED past actions of a top-down approach and implementing and doing their own thing without really consulting with local tribal leaders and education departments.
Hannah, what have you seen in your reporting with respect to these attempts to address the inequity and the lack of representation, especially of Indigenous people, culture, knowledge, science, in your reporting?
Yeah, I think the Mari is exactly right. There's a huge gap between the really, you know, the rich knowledge and frameworks that people who are doing Indigenous education have developed in charter schools, in, you know, schools in tribal schools, at UNM. There's this wealth of knowledge and of expertise when it comes to Native American education. And then you have to contrast that with a lot of the language that you see in, like, school district curriculum or something like that, where it's the language is more cultural competency, for example, which, you know, a lot of those Indigenous educators would say, well, that falls really short of getting at this whole other worldview that is different from Western education.
Trip.
In talking with some of the folks who are related to the lawsuit and people who've been saying this for decades, it's curricula, right? It's that, but it's deeper. It's actually, they want more control over the standards. So how you measure success. They want a lot of, and I don't know the mechanics of this. I don't know what they have to get from DC or whatever from this, but they want to be able to actually start controlling more of the conversation. So there's going to be a deep, deep, very deep, potentially tense conversation up in Santa Fe over this year and others. How do we shift the conversation?
Let's go to Norman in Albuquerque. Good morning, Norman. You're on the air.
Good morning. How's everybody doing?
We're doing good. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I was just concerned about the legislation from a Native point of view in public schools, in charter schools. And it seems to me like they really need a cultural diversity teaching in all the school systems. And how do Native American Indian have support in those systems, like as from the teacher point of view or from the administration point of view? In the system, the school systems, do they have Native American working in the school?
Like literally teachers, right?
Teachers, administrator, you know, just people on staff.
Got you. Thank you for your call, Norman. Hannah, did you have a closing thought on that?
Sure. Just that there have already been pre-filed bills that address that particular issue that you just mentioned. So providing incentives for Native New Mexicans to teach in certain schools, but also for incentives for teachers who want to teach English language learners, particularly Native Americans and Hispanic students. So there are some lawmakers thinking about the teacher representation piece of this.
Nice. And of course we are working with a certain amount of information here today. Their lawmakers have pre-filed some bills, but that does not in any way represent the breadth and depth of the work that lawmakers are doing or of the legislation that we're going to see during the session. So just a reminder, folks, that we're doing some estimation and so a little bit of not exactly crystal ball, but like using the best of our knowledge that we have right now to try to give you an idea of what to expect. This is Let's Talk New Mexico, and we're talking about the 2019 legislative session that kicks off next week. Do you think lawmakers will get more done this year now that the government is no longer divided? We've seen on the national level that sometimes when the executive branch and both houses of Congress are controlled by the same party, that there are still a lot of obstacles to getting things done. Will things be different this year in New Mexico? Give us a call. The number is 277-5866. You can also email letstalk@kunm.org. Now, I want to turn now to another big priority for lawmakers this year, the state's criminal justice system. We're talking police, courts, jails, prisons. Marisa DeMarco, reporter here at KUNM. This is your jam.
I guess so.
Earlier this year, you went to some of the meetings of the Courts, Corrections, and Justice Committee, and also the Criminal Justice Reform Subcommittee. Again, these are the interim committees where lawmakers are really doing a lot of their work prior to the actual session. Can you take us there to a couple of those meetings and let us know what that was like and what kinds of information are lawmakers working with as they're starting to try to figure out what they're going to actually do during the session?
Yeah, so these interim committee meetings, they happen all over the state. And I primarily attended the ones that were here in Albuquerque, but they do happen elsewhere. And they're not always webcast. Only the ones that are in Santa Fe are definitely going to be webcast. And so we were trying to supplement a little bit and be able to show some of the things that were being discussed online for people who can't take time off during the day to attend those meetings. But what happens is that, you know, there's a panel of lawmakers who work on these issues, and then different agencies from those regions come forward and talk about what's going on for them. We also hear from advocates who bring forward concerns. And then there's, you know, lawmakers ask those folks questions. And then there's public comment. And usually in the audience is mostly other people who work in criminal justice, different aspects of criminal justice system. So I think we saw a lot of things that conversations that I'm not even sure will result in legislation necessarily, right? So sometimes it's also just a chance for people to review what's going on and what the problems are. I'm also not sure how much of a focus criminal justice is going to be this session in some ways. I think, you know, for instance, I spent many hours listening to a lot of testimony about prison health care, which is a really big issue here in New Mexico, one that's been ongoing for decades, right? And we see lawsuits around deaths and serious injuries. But I don't know that that's something that lawmakers are going to pick up this session, right? I heard some rumbling that there might be a move to create an independent oversight committee that looks at how things are going. It's an incredibly opaque system. We don't really ever know what's going on inside of jails for people's health care. And it's something that costs the state millions and millions of dollars in lawsuits. Another thing is that, you know, there's a lot of criminal justice systems that within our state that haven't been fully funded and that are struggling, and that this results in problems for people within the criminal justice system.
You're talking about, like, there aren't judges or there aren't public defenders or that kind of thing?
Yeah. And there was, you know, there's concern about not being enough public defenders, having that become a constitutional crisis and potentially a big lawsuit for the state somewhere down the line. So as we're talking about where's this extra $1 billion going to go, or this projected $1 billion going to go, I think there's a lot of people within the criminal justice system who are hoping that it comes to their agencies as well. And we'll see it, because, you know, voters, the two things that they seem to really talk about during the election season was public safety and crime, and also education. Like, those are the two top things that are kind of vying for attention and vying for that money. So I did check in. A lot of this stuff hasn't been filed yet, but I did check in with lawmakers about what they're working on. There's going to be a package of 10 or 12 bills that already went through committee and potentially was vetoed by the governor, or already was voted on and then was vetoed by the governor, that they're going to try to push through again. And within those bills are things like geriatric parole, clarifying and changing the process for deciding who's eligible, older prisoners for parole. The Good Samaritan Law, expanding protections for people who report an overdose so that, if you're on probation or parole and you call for medical help for someone in, you know, in the room with you is having an overdose, that that won't be a violation of your probation or parole.
Which often it is if you're around other folks who are doing things like using illegal drugs. That
right.
might be considered violation.
Yeah. Got so it. You're protected in that situation. There's also an interesting bill about potentially establishing procedures for handling eyewitness testimony at different law enforcement agencies around the state. There's another one that would allow prisoners to request a DNA test if there wasn't DNA testing done when they were initially convicted.
Like if they thought, oh, I could be exonerated potentially.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there's one about creating a central data repository to allow criminal justice agencies to better track defendants around the state. So those are just some of the things that we're going to see in that kind of bigger package that have already been
right,
kind of
lawmakers
approved.
Are already like, yeah, let's do this. But it was the previous governor who was not willing to approve those things.
Yeah, okay. they had broad bipartisan support. That doesn't mean that they will keep having broad bipartisan support. One of the things I was wondering is if maybe sometimes people chipped in their yes vote kind of knowing that the governor was going to veto it, and so maybe they're not like firmly a yes vote, right?
Yeah.
So we'll kind of see how some of those things shake out. And then other individual bills that we're going to see on the criminal justice side, it hasn't been filed yet, but the solitary confinement regulations. So basically they would ban solitary outright for use on juveniles, pregnant women, and people who are mentally ill. And then for everyone else, they're talking about you can only be in solitary confinement for 15 consecutive days and then 60 days per year. So putting some regulation on the use of segregation or solitary confinement.
So it's not very heavily regulated right now, right?
No, and
it's
actually
used for all different kinds of things.
It's not heavily regulated, and it is another one of those areas within our criminal justice system where it's hard to see what's even happening. It's hard to know who's been in SEG and how long they've been in SEG. Those records can be really opaque also. We're going to see Ban the Box come through again. So that's on the initial paper job application that you fill out. There's a question like, have you had a felony conviction? And so they're saying that that should no longer be on those paper applications. They're not on job applications in the public sector, but they still are on the private sector.
And I guess the idea behind that is that it creates an opportunity for people to discriminate
mm-hmm.
against job applicants who do have convictions and to like not even consider them for the job at all.
They don't even get a foot in the door. So the idea there too, though, is that that question can still come up later on in the hiring process, but that just that initial application, it wouldn't be on that first round. So employers can still ask that question down the line. There's also word that maybe there's going to be a bill to decriminalize small amounts of narcotics. And that would mean that I think it's mostly focused on, for instance, like residues in pipes that are getting used in some jurisdictions to indict people. So we might see changes to that as well, which mm-hmm. would be, I mean, that would be kind of significant. And then there's also, there's going to be a move to increase the amount of money that law enforcement agencies get from homeowners policies. So right now, homeowners policy, a certain amount goes to law enforcement agencies, and they're trying to boost that a little bit. And there's another bill that's already been filed that would allow judges to consider releasing women who are pregnant or who are lactating from incarceration for a period of time. So it would still, it gives the judge the leeway to do that. It doesn't mean that automatically pregnant women are going to get out of jail or out of incarceration, but it gives them that choice, right?
Great. Thanks, Marisa. Marisa DeMarco, reporter at KUNM. Andy, with nmpoliticalreport.com, what's your take on the kind of progress that could be made on a lot of these criminal justice reform? You know, there's a wide range of things. There's potentially a big kind of like omnibus package type thing and then individual one-off on a lot of different issues. Are we seeing that Democrats might be divided on some of these things, or do you think some of these things are going to move?
There might be some Democrats that have there's a couple people I can think of in the legislature, both Senate and House side, that are maybe former judges, former law enforcement, and they might have some what they call heartburn. That's a common phrase in the legislature. But
meaning what?
That they have a hard time kind of
getting behind.
Yeah. I mean, and sometimes it's
like it's politically distasteful,
or that they just personally can't handle it. You know, just I mean, if you think about the physical heartburn, the actual heartburn, it kind of like doesn't sit well. But more importantly to me, I think there's going to be some Republicans are going to come out of the gate saying we actually support some of these things that we wouldn't vote on before. I think recidivism is going to be a common word this session, where the goal is going to be, how do we, instead of being tough on crime like they tried to, like the Republicans tried to do in, I think, 2016, is going to be, how do we make sure these people don't reoffend, right? Let's get them out into the, and so some of the ban the box, like Marisa was talking about, parole, probation, let's get these people back into society and actually contribute and maybe get a job and have a house and not be stuck in that rut of getting back into the life of crime.
We remove the barriers for folks who have been incarcerated to then be able to get jobs and
rent
houses.
And I think Republicans are actually really getting behind that. There's a group that's nationally been around for a long time, but sort of just in the past few years made a presence in New Mexico, the Americans for Prosperity, which is a Coke network group, and they are doing their
Coke brothers, not Coca-Cola.
Sorry. Yeah. Just, I was recently told that they're no longer the Coke brothers network. It's just the Coke. Yeah. Anyway,
gotcha.
So they have their own view, and sometimes it overlaps to the left leaning view of criminal justice reform. There's questions of, you know, how altruistic is everything and what are their goals. But I think you're going to have a lot of people coming to the table with some common goals of, let's get people back into society and let's kind of not be so draconian.
Marisa.
Yeah, I think there's also, I just wanted to mention, there's also a lot of talk about removing private companies from our prison system. So a lot of our prisons in New Mexico, more, I think half of them, are run by private companies. Our whole healthcare system is run by private companies. And I think some lawmakers are trying to figure out how to make it so that we're not relying on companies or corporations to run our prisons, and having that be part of the recidivism conversation too.
Really big picture observation. Prosecutor. That's what Governor Martinez was. We're going to be moving to a different philosophical worldview. Recidivism, education in prisons, private prisons is going to be a big deal. But this is going to be a situation where, and frankly, the Koch brothers thing, that's a conservative budget thing. Technical violations, you send people back to prison, you're paying $31,000 a year. So this is kind of a, you know, that's part of it's about budgeting, part of the Koch brothers, you know, support for this stuff.
I just wanted to add one thing that the Koch brothers and Americans for Prosperity, that's where the private prisons is where some of the divide is going to be, right? Because you get into the free market, and that's where you're going to see more of conversation about criminal justice reform. But some of these free market folks are going to say private prisons are okay versus the left saying let's get them out of here.
We'll
basically
have some togetherness, but then right.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. You're hearing from Trip Jennings of New Mexico In Depth, Andy Lyman of NMPoliticalReport.com, Marisa DeMarco of KUNM's newsroom. We're talking about the 2019 legislative session today and the work that state lawmakers have cut out for them. Call now to weigh in right now. What is the number one thing that you want to see lawmakers achieve during the session this year? The number one thing, 277-5866, or you can send an email to letstalk@kunm.org. We're going to take a break and we'll be back.
In a lot of ways, the public has kind of gone to sleep on the issue of nuclear weapons. I think that's changed to some extent more recently because we did see, you know, the rising tensions with North Korea, and the Trump administration, you know, has these many missteps and more dangerous actions.
This edition of AR features Lily Adams and Bruce Amundsen on preventing nuclear apocalypse.
That's Alternative Radio, Saturday night at 6 on KUNM.
Did you resolve to get rid of that ride that isn't worth fixing anymore? Well, that's one New Year's resolution that's easy to keep. Just call 888-KUNM-CAR. We'll tow it, sell it, and send you a tax receipt. Plus, you'll get a KUNM membership. That's one resolution down. Donate it online at KUNM.org. Under the support menu, select Donate Your Vehicle. or just call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico, and we are talking the 2019 legislative session that convenes on Tuesday next week. I'm Elaine Baumgartel, and this is KUNM. If you'd like to weigh in on our conversation with your preference for what lawmakers should do during the session this year, 277-5866 is the number to call. Marisa, I want to come back to you. You've looked at bills that deal with sexual assault survivors, one specifically that you described as a bill of rights. Tell us about that. It's kind of related to the criminal justice system, but it also does some more than that as well.
Yeah, so Representative Liz Thompson is carrying a measure that is called the Bill of Rights for Sexual Assault Survivors. And it's really detailed. It gets into, law enforcement interactions for sexual assault survivors, including regulation on how they're notified about their case and about their rights and who they talk to, which law enforcement officers, they have a choice about who they talk to with her Bill of Rights. And there's also a lot about the collection of sexual assault evidence kits. So making sure that somebody isn't ever charged for that evidence collection when they're working with a medical professional. Also making sure that they get information about how long their kit will be stored for, and also that they get 60 days of notice before their kit is destroyed. So what has happened in the past is that there's been these collections of these kits. They kind of languish without being evaluated or analyzed, the DNA evidence, and then they're destroyed. And sometimes sexual assault survivors didn't know that their kits were destroyed. And so this is really trying to specify choice and knowledge for people who are survivors of sexual assault.
Great. Thank you. Let's go to May Ortega. May is one of our public health reporters. Hey, May.
Hello.
You looked into a bunch of pre-filed bills as well, specifically around guns and gun safety. Again, a reminder, we don't know everything that lawmakers are going to do yet, but we do have an idea about, you know, what some of the folks who are getting in earlier are focusing on. Talk a little bit about the pre-filed bills that we know about and what they would do.
Sure. So there's a lot of bills looking at gun control, specifically background checks. There are a couple aiming to close what's called the gun show loophole, so that wherever you buy a gun in the state, regardless of the setting, even at a gun show, you have to get a background check to be able to buy the gun. There's a few of those coming from the House and the Senate, but other bills that are, there's a red flag bill that I actually covered earlier this last year, because it's 2019 now, a red flag bill which is intended to reduce gun-related deaths, be it suicides or homicides. So what this bill would do if it were to pass is that it would give a judge permission to rule that someone's firearms can be taken away temporarily if they're ruled to be showing suicidal or homicidal behavior. There's also another bill that is looking to prevent people who have been convicted of domestic violence from buying a firearm, and another bill that would punish someone if they fail to keep their guns in a secure, safe place and out of the wrong hands, like of children or something like that.
Got it. You also looked at a proposal to legalize recreational cannabis. This is something that I know, you know, I've seen a lot of buzz kind of talk about it on social media, the idea that like maybe recreational cannabis will be legalized this session, but it's more than just like, hey, make it legal. It's also about how will this be regulated? How will the cannabis be produced? Who's all of these things? So what exactly does this proposal, you talked to some of the lawmakers, what does this proposal do and how would it lay out a system for New Mexico?
Right. So it hasn't been filed yet, but it will be filed once the session begins. This would legalize the purchasing of recreational marijuana for people over 21 years old, like many other states have already done. This bill also includes other things, like a provision that would wipe your record if you have been convicted of a minor marijuana-related offense. So that would allow people who may have
retroactively
been convicted, as soon as it's as it's passed, you're good, which would allow a lot of people who might have been, who might have fallen under these circumstances to actually become producers later on if they wanted to. Governor Lujan Grisham has said that she would work with the legislature to make this happen. And people are really excited about that, but I think they should slow down. I have spoken to some lawmakers and also producers around the state, and everyone I've spoken to has said it's not going to happen this year.
Why? Why are they thinking that this isn't going to happen?
So from the lawmaker side, there seems to be concerns about whether it'll pass in the House. It's not really a question about it'll pass in the Senate. It seems that there is support for that there. But the House, what I've been told, is that has a more conservative, older population who might not be all on board.
And what are some of the concerns about legalizing or regulating or, you know, setting up a system for producing recreational cannabis in New Mexico? What are the concerns about that?
So there are a lot of concerns that, like in a lot of states that we've seen, like Colorado, for example, that big out-of-state companies will come in here who have more money and more resources than our smaller locally based growers and just take over the whole industry and maybe drive our growers, our local growers, out of business. And the producers I spoke to as well had several concerns, but one of them, one of their main reasons that they think it won't be legalized this year is because this is a really new territory for New Mexico. They say that we haven't had the chance to really analyze how the system would work. So they believe maybe this year will be a good chance to get to familiarize ourselves with how it would work, but that next year is really when we'll have the knowledge to be able to sink our teeth into what this is going to look like.
Got it. Thanks, May. Let's go to the phones now. Jan in Mountain Air. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling because I'm interested in the legislature revisiting its relationship with RETA, which is the Renewable Energy Transmission Authority. We recently learned about their existence with some potentially chaotic transmission lines cutting through a lot of private land in and around Mountain Air. It seems that this transmission authority is actually funded by industry, which in my mind is never really a good thing for the people. I think New Mexico needs to have conversation about how much of this incredible landscape we are willing to give up to a cobweb of transmission lines as we move toward more renewable and sustainable energy sources. I'm all about it. I live completely off-grid, which, of course, these big solar companies, big solar and wind companies, I'm probably their biggest enemy. But I really think we need to look more seriously at established utility corridors, because as it is now, basically any company can come in, claim eminent domain on anybody's property, and run their lines anywhere they want to. And I don't know if any of you have traveled up 285 once you branch off north of Espanola, but that whole beautiful valley is one big transmission line. And I think we need to decide as a state how much we're willing to do in terms of ruining our landscape in this process.
Great, Jen. Thanks for that call. I want to go now to Bill in Pecos. Good morning, Bill. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Hey, I enjoyed that last speaker. I think she's on to something there, because what I would like to see the legislature take up and the governor is the Green New Deal, and really give the threat of climate change the attention it deserves. I think maybe 20 years ago, the pioneers put out a paper called Dreaming New Mexico, and it was a map of the age of renewables and, you know, revolution from the heart of nature. I think if we convert to renewables and do it locally, as opposed to this huge corporate gangrene, they call them, you know, industries that come in from out of state or whatever and don't really give us that many jobs and whatnot. you know, can be done organically, locally. And I like what that woman said about just doing it really so that it doesn't ruin the landscape. You know?
Great, Bill. Thank you. I want to put these questions about renewable energy to Trip Jennings from New Mexico in depth. What can we expect from the legislature this year and from our new governor, Michelle Lujan Grisham, when it comes to renewable energy?
You're going to have a complete sea change in the philosophy. You had a Martinez who really didn't really go for this stuff. You're going to have lawmakers and certain people pushing for. There's something called the Renewable Portfolio Standard, which is requires the state to get a certain amount of energy from renewables. It's right now, it was at 20%. I think it's been scaled. I think the something happened when the Republicans had the House. Actually, it's still at 20%. They want to push it to 50% and by 2030, I think, and 80% by 2040 or 50. So this is a conversation. RETA is Renewable Energy Transmission Authority. Richardson administration actually put that out there. They were trying to get it up and running. What happened was during Martinez, she defunded it. And it kind of like this would actually require they would actually try to build transmission lines that would help pump out renewable energy. So much in renewable energy would have to flow on these lines. Your two callers brought up some of the issues that people are going to have that's going to be part of the debate. But listen, the Lujan Grisham administration, they're already talking about the RETA. They're already talking about bringing that back up.
So, Trip, for New Mexico in depth for this session, what are your top coverage priorities?
Education, budget, renewables, energy, criminal justice, good government, ethics commission, all that kind of stuff. I also want to put a plug out.
Oh, so you're going to cover everything.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff, but yeah, but I also want to put a plug out. We have a 40-page special edition that's going out on Santa Fe, Farmington, Las Cruces in the papers there, Alamogordo and Carlsbad Sunday, and then running in the Rio Grande Sun in Deming, Rio Doso, and Silver City next week during the week, where you can pick up some of these issues. And it'll be online on our thing as well.
Yeah, we'll
on
link,
our site.
As soon as it goes live, we'll link to it on this page as well.
NMNDepth.com.
Great. Andy, and in politicalreport.com, top coverage issues.
For me personally, I'll be looking at, education, criminal justice reform. My colleague, Laura Paskus, will be doing environment coverage as she does. We also have a reporter that will be looking at sort of women's reproductive or health issues. But mostly it's going to be like a fire hose of information coming at us, I think, for a certain amount of time. So
60 days.
Mm-hmm.
Fire hose. 60
yep.
days. Hannah Colton, Public Health New Mexico, top coverage priorities for this session.
Right. So a lot of them have to do with education. I'm going to be really interested in who amongst the many stakeholders in this Yazzie Martinez landscape is getting their issues before lawmakers, right, and getting their issues signed. Overall quality of life for teachers, I think that's a big one, is addressing the teacher shortage. And there's a lot of bills already pre-filed aimed at how do we get and keep good teachers? And then also school security and safety. This is something I've been looking at in my reporting. And yeah, what does the legislature want as far as keeping school safe?
Great. Thanks. Marisa DeMarco, KUNM reporter, top coverage priorities for the session.
Within criminal justice, I think definitely looking at the funding, how the funding is allocated and where it goes for different parts of the criminal justice system. I'm interested in that solitary confinement bill, which we've seen come through a number of times.
Mayor Ortega, top coverage priority for the session this year?
Oh, healthcare.
Healthcare.
For sure.
All the way. Public Health New Mexico. Thanks, everybody. Just a reminder, KUNM is partnering with New Mexico PBS and nmpolitics.net to, NM Political Report to live annotate Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham's first State of the State address. You'll be able to tune in live to KUNM on Tuesday afternoon next week or watch New Mexico PBS. Of course, this will be streamed online as well, but we'll be live annotating her speech as quickly as we can while she is presenting her priorities for her first term in office. We've reached the end of the hour, but the conversation does not have to end right here. You can post comments on our website, KUNM.org, or on our Facebook page. Search for KUNM Radio. Thanks to Marisa DeMarco, May Ortega, Hannah Colton, Andy Lyman, and Trip Jennings. If you missed part of the show, You can stream it online or you can share it. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Marino Spencer engineered the show today. Celia Rainey screened your calls. Bryce Dix live. Thanks to Rashad Mahmood for his production assistance. I'm your host, Elaine Baumgartel. I'm the news director here. Thanks for listening. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.